to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, December the 21st. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. First, let's take a look at the weather for eastern Iowa. Today, we're expecting a partly cloudy day, but it'll be windy. Winds will be from the west-northwest at 15 to 25 miles per hour. Cedar Rapids will see a high of 40 degrees, 41 in Iowa City, and then falling to a low this evening of 23 in Cedar Rapids, 24 in Iowa City. Sunset tonight is at 4:38 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow morning at 7:32 a.m. for a total daylight period of 9 hours and 7 minutes. And now from the front page of today's Gazette, Congress seals deal on a $900 billion COVID-19 relief bill. This is a national story coming from the Associated Press, but obviously of vital interest to everyone here in Iowa. Top Capitol Hill negotiators sealed an agreement on Sunday on an almost $1 trillion COVID-19 economic relief package, finally delivering long overdue help to businesses and individuals and providing money to deliver vaccines to a nation eager for them. The agreement announced by congressional leaders would establish a temporary $300 per week supplemental jobless benefit and a $600 direct stimulus payment to most Americans, along with a new round of subsidies for hard-hit businesses and money for schools, healthcare providers, and renters facing eviction. It came after months of battling and posturing, but the negotiating dynamic changed in Republicans' favor after the election and as the end of the congressional session neared. President-elect Joe Biden was eager for a deal to deliver long-awaited help to suffering people and a boost to the economy, even though it was less than half the size that Democrats wanted this fall. House leaders informed lawmakers that they would vote on the legislation today, and the Senate was likely to vote today, too. Lawmakers were eager to leave Washington and close out a tumultuous year. There will be another major rescue package for the American people, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, said in announcing the agreement for a relief bill that would total almost $900 billion. It is packed with targeted policies to help struggling Americans who have already waited too long. A fight over Federal Reserve emergency powers was resolved Saturday night by the Senate's top Democrat, Chuck Schumer of New York, and conservative Republican Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania. That breakthrough led to a final round of negotiations Sunday. Still, delays in finalizing the agreement prompted the House to pass a one-day stopgap spending bill to prevent a government shutdown at midnight Sunday. The Senate was likely to pass the measure Sunday night as well. The final agreement would be the largest spending measure yet. It combined COVID-19 relief with a $1.4 trillion government-wide funding plan and lots of other unrelated measures on taxes, health, infrastructure, and education. The government-wide funding would keep the government open through September. Passage neared as coronavirus cases and deaths spiked and evidence piled up that the economy was struggling. The legislation had been held up by months of dysfunction, posturing, and bad faith. But talks turned serious in recent days as lawmakers on both sides finally faced the deadline of acting before leaving Washington for Christmas. This bill is a good bill. Tonight is a good night. But it is not the end of the story. It is not the end of the job, Schumer told reporters. Anyone who thinks this bill is enough does not know what's going on in America. The $300 per week bonus jobless benefit was one half the supplemental federal unemployment benefit provided under the $1.8 billion CARES Act in March and would be limited to 11 weeks instead of 16 weeks. The direct $600 stimulus payment to most people would also be half the March payment, subject to the same income limits in which an individual's payment began to phase out after $75,000. The CARES Act was credited with keeping the economy from falling off a cliff amid widespread lockdowns this spring. But Republicans controlling the Senate cited debt concerns in pushing against Democratic demands. Republican politicians, starting with Donald Trump, focused more on reopening the economy and less on taxpayer-financed steps like supplemental jobless benefits. Pelosi, in a letter to colleagues, called the package an initial step. In 31 days, when Joe Biden enters the White House, more help will be on the way, Pelosi said. The bill was an engine to carry much of Capitol Hill's unfinished business, including an almost 400-page water resources bill that targets $10 billion for 46 Army Corps of Engineers flood control, environmental, and coastal protection projects. Another addition would extend a batch of soon-to-expire tax breaks, including one for craft brewers, wineries, and distillers. Also from the front page of today's Gazette, the Mississippi River water quality gets a D. This is a story by Aaron Jordan of the Gazette staff. Mississippi River water quality has worsened in the last 5 years, spurred by agricultural runoff from Midwest states, including Iowa, according to a new report from America's Watershed Initiative. The group gave the Mississippi River watershed a C-, up slightly from a D-plus in 2015, when looking at four metrics: water quality and ecosystems, flood control and risk management, transportation and water supply. But when focusing just on water quality, the river into which waters from 31 states flow, and that makes up Iowa's eastern border, got a D. It's a real concern that while we're working on this issue, and it's been a priority of our state, we're not making any more progress, said Larry Weber, a University of Iowa professor of civil and environmental engineering and chairman of the Institute's report card committee. In fact, we're going in the wrong direction. In Iowa, the amount of nitrogen flowing into the Mississippi River has doubled in the last 20 years, with the annual load being more than 1 billion pounds two of the last 4 years, according to the report, which issues data from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Ambient Stream Monitoring. Although nitrogen is naturally occurring, this outsized load comes from commercial fertilizer and manure that washes from corn and soybean fields into streams and rivers, Weber said. Nitrate and phosphorus in the Mississippi River contributes to the Gulf of Mexico dead zone, an area of low or no oxygen water that can't support marine life. Over the last 5 years, the dead zone averaged 5,408 square miles, which is about three times larger than the Gulf of Mexico Hypoxia Task Force target of 1,950 square miles, the report said. Although Iowa notes progress each year in the number of conservation practices, such as acres of cover crops, restored wetlands, and installed bioreactors, those water quality measures aren't keeping up with harmful practices, such as over-application of manure, Weber said. The effort is far, far too small, and the effort is being completely overshadowed by the intensification of agriculture, he said. We continue to put more subsurface draining in, use more commercial fertilizer, more livestock manure. That is completely overshadowing the good conservation practices. A 2018 University of Iowa study showed landowners in two western Iowa watersheds were applying nitrogen fertilizer at more than double the recommended rate, causing higher nitrate levels in streams there. Although Iowa's nutrient reduction strategy does not have any mandatory steps for farmers, Weber would like to see state regulations on the amounts of manure and commercial fertilizer that may be applied. President-elect Joe Biden said last week he plans to put more federal money toward incentives for farmers who plant cover crops and put land into conservation, steps that would improve water quality and could sequester carbon. He also wants American agriculture to achieve net zero emissions. Biden's nomination of former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack to lead the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which Vilsack also led during President Barack Obama's tenure, is encouraging to Weber. One of the things Secretary nominee Vilsack could be working on would be how he could bring a focus to water resources, Weber said. He'd like to see the Mississippi River get the same attention as the Florida Everglades and the Great Lakes, and a direct line of annual funding. Secretary Vilsack is well aware of some of the best practices we've used in our state, Weber said, pointing to the process of making targeted improvements across an entire watershed and measuring impact. Some of these practices we've tested here in Iowa could provide incredible value. Also from today's front page, low income hurt most due to pandemic, a story by Kat Russell of the Gazette staff. Iowa's low-income families are some of the hardest hit when it comes to financial stressors of the coronavirus pandemic. More than half of Iowa's low-income respondents reported loss of income, increased expenses, and/or struggling to pay for basic essentials due to the COVID-19 pandemic, according to a survey released Friday. The study by United Way of Iowa and Research IQ at the University of Northern Iowa identified the three main concerns among respondents as, first, a second wave of virus activity and closures, next, a household member contracting COVID-19, next, mental health issues. Families with household incomes below $50,000 also reported higher concerns about paying for food, utilities, and rent or mortgage. I think we knew or had a hunch that lower-income families were being unevenly affected by the pandemic, and this study reinforced that, said Kristen Roberts, President and Chief Executive Officer of United Way of East Central Iowa. The study, Roberts said, divided respondents into three socioeconomic statuses: those who live below the federal poverty line, those who earn a gross income above the federal poverty line and up to $50,000, and those who earn more than $50,000 gross income. That's how we were able to see that it's those living below the federal poverty line and those in-betweeners, what we call the cliff effect families, who are suffering the greatest impacts as the result of the pandemic, she said. The current federal poverty line, according to Roberts, sits at roughly $1,040 gross monthly income for a single adult, or $1,400 gross monthly income for a household of two or more people. The term cliff effect family, Roberts said, describes those who are living above the federal poverty line but make less than $50,000. In normal times, she said, they may make enough money to support their families and make ends meet. But should something go wrong, the water heater breaks, for example, or hours get cut at work, or a derecho tears the roof off their house, their resources become depleted. The survey asked respondents several questions about their financial status before, during, and since pandemic shutdowns, Roberts said. Results showed that about 75% of Iowans pre-COVID-19 had income from a job in which they were able to work more than 35 hours per week. But during COVID, that number has dropped to 66%. That's an 8-point drop. So now we have fewer people in the state who have that primary source of income as a job over 35 hours per week, Roberts said. As a result, those relying on unemployment payments as the primary source of household income rose from 1% pre-pandemic to 11% at the time of the survey, especially among those in their 20s and 30s. In addition, the study showed that the percentage of Iowans who could not cover 1 month of expenses increased from 18% before the pandemic to 31% at the time of the survey, which was conducted September 20 through November the 2nd. Moreover, 6% of respondents indicated child care issues made them unable to work, and an additional 10% reported taking care of children required them to work reduced hours. Extrapolated over Iowa's total workforce of 1.5 million workers, researchers said the study suggested approximately 90,000 Iowans are not working at all, and another 150,000 are not working as much as they could due to child care issues. As a result, community resources that offer financial assistance are seeing a significant increase in the need for services and in the length of time that help is needed. The need has increased drastically, said Janae Peterman, Director of Housing and Homeless Services with Waypoint Services in Cedar Rapids. We see that those who are very low income are losing housing and unable to identify new housing. Those that are moderately low income that in the past had resources to self-resolve are unable to do so and are seeking services or are entering homelessness for the first time. As a result, Peterman said, Waypoint has seen a shift in clientele. Instead of a majority of those seeking help being homeless or previously homeless, the households that are now requesting services are nearing homelessness because they are facing eviction or unable to meet their financial obligations. That's one of the big things we are seeing that is different this year, is that we are seeing people needing help who have never had to apply for assistance before in their life, but they have been so substantially impacted by either the pandemic or the derecho that they're looking for assistance, said Ashley Balias, Community Outreach and Assistance Director for Linn County Community Services. That agency manages the county's general assistance services. There are many who still are employed, she added, but find they are in need of assistance, even if it's just short-term assistance, because they have either been ill with COVID-19 or they had to quarantine for 2 weeks and therefore lost a portion of their income. So they're losing half a month of income or more because they're sick and can't work, or because they've been exposed to the virus and then have to quarantine for days, Balias said. General assistance services individuals and families in Linn County who are experiencing financial crisis. The service offers qualified residents up to $450 in financial aid to cover utility or rent or mortgage payments. The service also offers up to $1,000 in burial assistance to help with cremation costs. That's another area where we've seen the need skyrocket recently, Balias noted. So in an average year for general assistance, we would provide burial assistance for about 70 to 75 people. And this year, I'm projecting that number is going to be closer to about 125, based on the numbers I've seen so far and on the volumes of calls we've had regarding that service. For many Iowa households, Roberts said the impact of the pandemic could last for years. It will likely take months, if not years, for these families who've been taking the brunt of the pandemic to be able to find their way out, she said. If you look at the data, for instance, 35% of low-income and cliff effect families took out loans in order to cover basic needs, and 29% have used up their personal savings. So if you think about what it takes to recover from that, and again, you throw in the unexpected, like your car breaks down or your water heater goes out, and then you add in the storm, it just puts people in such a state of financial frailty that we're probably going to see that impact for a while. The United Way survey can be read at https://, and then there's bit.ly/ 3NBFO5D. Turning to today's opinion page, we have a guest column by Brian Waller Brian is the president of the Technology Association of Iowa, and his column is entitled Technology Ready to Lead Business Back. Across America, the top issue on many minds as 2020 comes to a close is the economy. Iowa is no different. For many Iowans, it is their primary concern, second only to the coronavirus pandemic. It isn't hard to see how the two are linked. Before COVID-19, Iowa's trajectory for economic growth was more promising than ever, but the pandemic has upended everything about how we live, including how we do business. It isn't all bad news, though. Iowa is uniquely positioned to make the most of this moment. In recent years, we've seen some of the world's biggest tech companies make Iowa their home, and entrepreneurs and exciting new businesses remain core drivers of innovation and economic growth in communities across the state. An increasingly digital mindset was paying off well before the pandemic. Still, even more so now as small businesses and medium-sized businesses have fallen back on a digital safety net of tools and strategies to survive over the past few months. That digital fail-safe can be traced back to Iowa's tech companies, helping to create the new toolbox for operating in the internet age. Adopting new methods of doing business has included everything from online ordering and delivery services for restaurants and the expansion of e-commerce and shipping logistics for retail. In ways big and small, the technology that has its roots in Iowa has kept local businesses resilient, despite all the challenges 2020 has thrown at them. While a lot of larger businesses and industries in Iowa were well positioned to make the transition from physical to digital pre-COVID, some of the most remarkable innovations have come from the areas we might not expect: mom-and-pop businesses, K-12 education, and even local government. That's great news for everybody. The barriers to entry have never been lower for those looking to leverage technology to adapt to changing circumstances. At the Technology Association of Iowa, we believe every Iowa company is a technology company. We're dedicated to helping foster new relationships and empowering businesses of all sizes to invest in Iowa's innovation ecosystem. But just like many small businesses have learned over the past few months, we can't go it alone. We need robust support for innovation and the digitization of business from our representatives at every level. Our lawmakers must understand the critical role technology has played over the past few months and the role it will play in building back a strong economy that works for all of us: small business owners, the customers who patronize them, and the state as a whole. With 2020 nearly behind us, it's time to look forward and envision a brighter future. As this pandemic continues, I hope that our representatives in Congress and the State House will work to ensure all Iowans have quality broadband access, connecting them to the digital tools that move their businesses forward and won't create policy that limits employers and small business owners using digital technologies to maintain responsible and safe operations. We put our faith in policymakers at the ballot box in November, and now it's time for them to show us that they understand the mandate to help facilitate a robust, technology-driven economic rebound. And that column by Brian Waller, president of the Technology Association of Iowa. And we have two letters to the editor today, the first coming from Patrick Muller of Hills. This letter is entitled, Conversations, Relationships Create Art in the Community. Just add water. For me, a work of art is raw material until it engages individuals and communities and sustains conversations with them. When these conversational relationships emerge, the work truly becomes art. If you want an illustration of my philosophy, there's one close by. In the summer of 2019, as part of its Revolution 1989 exhibition, the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library built a replica section of the Berlin Wall in Czech Village in Cedar Rapids. Des Moines artist Jordan Weber used a remnant of that wall in a collaborative project with students from two Cedar Rapids high schools, Metro and Washington. They created a little free library that dovetails nicely with the African American Museum of Iowa's current exhibition, Unwavering, 21st Century Activism. According to the work's description, this collaboration allowed the students to grapple with themes of social justice, social protest, and counteracting systemic oppression with community good. This work spans two exhibitions, links four organizations, two cultural centers, and two schools, and brings dozens of individuals into direct or indirect interaction, and offers a new treasure to the community. AAMI and NCSML collaboratively and jointly own this work. Currently on display at AAMI, books may be taken from the library or donated to it. Water added. That note by Patrick Muller of Hills. And our final letter today comes from Jim Glasson. Jim is from West Branch, and his piece is entitled, Hart Wants Every Vote Counted. We Deserve No Less. Kudos to Rita Hart. Iowans deserve an accurate ballot count for U.S. House District, 2nd District. While an initial recount examined ballots that had not been counted correctly on Election Day, several counties did not conduct the full hand recount necessary to make sure every vote was counted. The recount process in Iowa used just 3 people per county to examine ballots, making it impossible to hand count every ballot over the course of 2 weeks. There remain thousands more ballots that have not been examined for voter intent. Hart had 6 days under the Iowa Code to appeal to Iowa's legal system for redress after the certification. If 72 members of the recount boards could not do that in the time they had, then 5 members of a judicial panel could not do it in less than a week, stated retired Iowa Judge Gary McKendrick. Iowa Senate Minority Leader Zach Wall offers, if Republicans are interested in a fair process instead of a rushed timeline, we'd be happy to introduce a leadership bill early in the session to remove Iowa's arbitrary deadline to allow this process to move forward in Iowa court rather than Congress. Until then, Rita's decision will allow the necessary time to accurately adjudicate this process and is the right call. And that letter by Jim Glasson of West Branch. And you're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, December the 21st, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. From Cedar Rapids, Leroy Walter Byerworth, age 94, passed away on Thursday, December 17. Private services will be held at the Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids. And also from Cedar Rapids, Merrill J. Hutchinson, age 98, left our earthly company on December 19 to meet his maker and gain passage into heaven. A private family graveside service at Cedar Memorial will be held at a later date. And from Cedar Rapids, Marjorie Jane Leach, age 92, died Friday, December 18, at the Northbrook Manor Care Center in Cedar Rapids. Memorial services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, December 23, at the Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion. From Coralville, John W. Clear, age 78, died Friday, December 18, at Mercy Hospital. The immediate family will celebrate a mass of Christian burial at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, December 22, at St. Thomas More Catholic Church in Coralville. Visitation for friends will be from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Tuesday at the church. And entombment will be in Memory Gardens. From Cedar Rapids, Alvin Miller, age 94, passed away on Saturday, December 19, at the Northbrook Manor. A private service will be held at Cedar Memorial Funeral Home. Visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, December 23, at the Cedar Memorial Chapel of Memories. And from Cedar Rapids, Dustin Schuyler Craig Smiley, age 28, passed away peacefully at his home in Cedar Rapids on Wednesday, December the 16th. A visitation will be held at the Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home from 5 to 8 p.m. Monday. A private funeral service will be held at the Cedar Memorial Chapel of Memories on Tuesday, December 22nd. Interment at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. From Hiawatha, Chang Yule Douglas, age 85, of Hiawatha, died peacefully Friday, December 18, at the Hiawatha Care Center. Services are today at 10 a.m. at the Tien Funeral Home. Burial is in Arlington Memory Gardens in Choctaw, Oklahoma. Friends may visit with the family on Monday after 9:30 a.m. Attendance is, and all in attendance must wear a mask and comply with social distancing guidelines. From Marion, Robert Dart Gritman, age 92, died Friday, December 18, at his home. A private family service will be held at the Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home and burial with military rites at the Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. From Newall, Walter D. Sackett, age 71, passed away following a brief illness with his wife and children by his side on Monday, December 14, at St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. A celebration of Wally's life will be held at a later date. And from Grinnell, Fran Mellert, age 91, died on Saturday, December 19, at the Windsor Manor in Grinnell, and under the care of Unity Point Health in Grinnell Regional Hospice. A private family service will be held on Tuesday, December 22nd at the Smith Funeral Home in Grinnell. Interment will be at Hazelwood Cemetery in Grinnell. And in other death notices from Cedar Rapids, Theodore, also known as Ted or Butch Bean Jr., age 81, died Sunday, December 20. The Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. From Cedar Rapids, Arliss M. Sedlacek, age 84, died Saturday, December 19. The Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. From Cedar Rapids, Karen Ann Weiderin, age 77, died Sunday, December 20. The Tien Funeral Home in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. And from Dyersville, Hugo L. Engelken, age 92, of Dyersville, formerly of Petersburg, died Saturday, December 19. The Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville is assisting the family. From Independence, David J. Kaiser, age 77, died Friday, December 18. The Rife Family Center in Independence is assisting the family. From Iowa City, Trudy Ann LaFoon, age 65, died Thursday, December 17. The Lensing Funeral and Cremation Service in Iowa City is assisting the family. From Jessup, Deanna S. Schomer, age 57, died Saturday, December 19. The Rife Family Center in Independence is assisting the family. From Kelowna, Teresa Gostinsky, age 72, died Wednesday, December 16. The Yoder Powell Funeral Home in Kelowna is assisting the family. Also from Kelowna, Rachel Graber, age 96, died Saturday, December 19. The Yoder Powell Funeral Home in Kelowna is assisting the family. Also from Kelowna, Nancy Lou Miller, age 57, died Friday, December 18. The Yoder Powell Funeral Home in Kelowna is assisting the family. From Mount Vernon, Robert J. Benson, Sr., age 74, died Friday, December 18. The Cruz Phillips Funeral Home in Tama, Toledo, is assisting the family. From Olwine, Albert P., also known as Al Dressen, age 97, died Saturday, December 19. The Jameson Schmitz Funeral Home in Olwine is assisting the family. From Stanwood, Doris J. Tenley, age 88, died Saturday, December 19. The Fry Funeral Home in Tipton is assisting the family. Turning to today's sports page, we have no prep sports today. The next best thing is an Iowa football story. It's entitled Next Stop Nashville, a story by Jeff Johnson of the Gazette staff. If you've heard Kirk Ferentz speak lately, you've noticed him cough a lot. The Iowa football coach said he typically develops one late in a season. The work hours are long. There's been a lot of travel. He's working daily with a bunch of people. The immune system gets a workout. So he was caught off guard when he was told last week he had COVID-19. I was really kind of surprised when the positive test came back, the 65-year-old Ferentz said Sunday in a Zoom chat with reporters from his home in Iowa City, where he's isolating. I'm very, very fortunate that I have not really had much of an issue. The cough is annoying, but it has subsided a little bit. I haven't had much issue, and I really feel fortunate because I do realize a lot of people haven't been so lucky. So I consider myself very lucky, and hopefully it'll stay that way the rest of the way. Meanwhile, Indiana, from Barta's own Big Ten, a team whose only loss was by one score at Ohio State, went unselected by the New Year's Six Bowls and was even spurned by the Citrus Bowl in favor of Northwestern. They didn't have the quality wins Iowa State had, Barta said, which was true. The Cyclones beat Oklahoma earlier in the season and won at Texas. Indiana didn't defeat a team with a single winning record at season's end. Nor did Iowa, which tumbled to the Music City Bowl because Indiana didn't get a slot in the New Year's Six. Although, what difference is there this year between a Citrus and an Outback and a Music City? I'd rather play in the Cure Bowl, just in the hope the game lived up to the name. Anyway, the Hawkeyes will play Missouri in the Music City Bowl in Nashville, though Keokuk or Hannibal seem more logical locations. To recap, Iowa State got its best bowl bump ever in the year Iowa City's AD, athletic director, was the CFP's selection committee chairman. And Iowa, 15th in the final CFP rankings with a six-game winning streak, is in the third-tier Music City Bowl against a 5-5 Missouri team that lost 51-32 Saturday to Mississippi State, which won for the third time in 10 games. I told our team nobody likes what happened, and nobody wants to go out like that, Missouri coach Eliah Drinkwitz said. We're going to put on our big boy pants and face it, get some break for Christmas, and come back and fight like hell to fix it. Big boy pants, is that ever not funny? Okay, so does any of this mean anything? Usually not much. This year, less. Iowa State finished first place in the Big 12. That, folks, is something. Its Fiesta Bowl foe, Oregon, had the third best record in the Pac-12 North. It also is the Pac-12 champion. That happened because the Ducks were tied for second in the North last week, and had the tiebreaker when the Pac-12 needed a team to replace a Washington team plagued with COVID-19 issues. Oregon stepped in, then beat USC in the league championship. USC promptly opted out of going to a bowl, as did a lot of other teams, including several from the Big Ten. Many people are angry Iowa State got a Fiesta Bowl invitation and not Indiana or Coastal Carolina. ISU fans can relate. There have been times when the Cyclones fell further down the bowl chain than they perhaps should have, because the Big 12 had lousy bowl affiliations compared to those of the Big 10 and the SEC. It's weird to see the Big 10, which has flexed its muscles so often for so long, relegated to just one team in the big bowls. So a well-regarded Iowa team will play a Music City Bowl game against a Missouri club that lost to Georgia by 5 touchdowns a weekend ago, that lost 5 times by double digits, and that has allowed 49.3 points a game during its last 3 games. Such is the bowl industry. Iowa State, meanwhile, is in a Fiesta Bowl thanks to its own achievements and a little help from Gary Barta and his friends. We're all in bizarro world this year. Turning to today's Dear Abby column, it's entitled Guest List Change, Spurs an Angry Response. Dear Abby, I've known Ashley for a lot of years. She's single. Several years ago, I introduced her to another couple, the Smiths. We all have a lot in common and take turns inviting each other for dinner. 2 weeks ago, Ashley invited my husband and me and the Smiths for dinner. 3 days before the dinner, Ashley sent me a text that the Smiths will be bringing another couple, and she wanted to be sure it was okay with us. I called her immediately and told her that with the spike in COVID cases, I wasn't comfortable having a close dinner with a couple who wasn't in my social circle. She said she was sorry, meaning if I didn't like it, my husband and I could stay home. I'm extremely hurt and angry, and I'm losing sleep over this. I feel Ashley should have asked us before adding this other couple to our dinner. I feel like sending her a letter saying that no friend should treat another friend like this, that I guess she's not really a friend, and end the relationship. My husband is stopping me from sending such a letter. Am I overreacting? That's signed Angry in Oregon. And Abby responds, Dear Angry, yes, you are. You have blown this out of proportion. Be glad you have a husband who advised you as he did. Ashley did the right thing by telling you the guest list for the dinner had grown so you could opt out if you wished. Because she was the host, she was not obligated to ask permission to include the extras. And from the Iowa Today section, here's a nice story by Michaela Ram of the Gazette staff entitled, A Way for Cedar Rapids to Thank Healthcare Workers. In the spirit of uplifting frontline healthcare workers who have been grappling with the coronavirus pandemic, the Cedar Rapids Med Quarter has launched a holiday campaign to thank those medical professionals. The Med Quarter Regional Medical District has launched a campaign called Gifts of Gratitude in an effort to send holiday cheer to medical workers and other staff in area hospitals. Many of these workers are exhausted and not seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. As holidays approach, Med Quarter Executive Director Phil Wasta said, the goal of the campaign is to uplift the staff using words of affirmation and other holiday messages sent to them directly from members of the community. It's time for us, the communities that these healthcare workers serve, to lift these people up and express our gratitude, Wasta said in a statement. I'm working directly with the hospitals, clinics, and practices in the Med Quarter to make sure that these expressions of appreciation make it to their intended recipient. There is no better time than now to be grateful for those who protect our health every single day, he added. Community members can send a holiday message directly to the healthcare professional of choice, as well as a specific clinic, hospital, or healthcare practice. Messages may be submitted through January the 5th. People can send a message to healthcare workers by filling out the form at themedq.com or through the Med Quarter Facebook page. Also a story by Aaron Murphy of the Gazette Des Moines Bureau, Hopeful Moment in the Pandemic. First came the words, and shortly after, the tears. The moment was not expected, but neither was it difficult to interpret. A week ago, the first doses of the COVID-19 vaccine were administered across the country, including in Iowa. It was a seminal moment in the ninth month of the ongoing pandemic. The first shot in Iowa was documented by a few journalists, including Vanessa Miller and Andy Abeta of the Gazette. At 9:39 a.m. December 14, Miller tweeted a five-second video of David Conway, an emergency room nurse at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, receiving the historic shot. I retweeted that video with my own caption, "The COVID-19 vaccine is being administered today in Iowa." As I typed those words, tears formed in my eyes as emotions welled up inside. I hadn't expected that, but thinking about it afterward, it made complete sense. This has been a rough 9 months for a lot of people, for a lot of reasons, and the COVID-19 vaccines are the brightest rays of hope yet for a return to normalcy. For everything we have endured in this marathon of a miserable year, the finish line is finally in sight. In too many ways, this pandemic has made 2020 a miserable year. COVID-19 has taken the lives of about 3,500 Iowans, more than 300,000 Americans, and nearly 2 million people worldwide. Many businesses, especially in the hospitality industry, have been crushed by the pandemic. As a result, many workers have been laid off, missing out on essential income. Food insecurity in Iowa has doubled, meaning twice as many Iowans and their families are worried about having enough food on the table during the holidays. Schools shut down in the spring, and this fall have dealt with starts and stops, many of them shuffling between having students in their buildings and trying to learn remotely. Families and friends have been kept apart while the virus rages. That's a lot to deal with, and we've all been dealing with it now for the better part of a year. It has been difficult, and it has been trying. So when those first shipments of the vaccine arrive, hope arrived with them. There are still months to go in this pandemic, still a few miles to run in this marathon. But with the vaccine's arrival, for the first time, we can sense the pandemic's end. Iowa expects to receive more than 138,000 doses of the vaccines in December. The state has prioritized for those first doses hospital workers and residents and staff at long-term care facilities, such as nursing homes. After those people have received the vaccines, the next wave of doses will be made available to workers in essential and high-traffic professions, such as emergency response, food processing, education, and corrections. Eventually, experts say sometime next spring or summer, the vaccine will be available for anyone who wants it. That process began this past week with a nurse in Iowa City. For the first time in 9 months, we have hope. Hope is a powerful emotion. It's even strong enough to make one tear up while composing a simple tweet. Our next story is entitled, Iowa Adds 138 More Virus Deaths. After not confirming any additional COVID-19 deaths over the last 2 days, the state Sunday morning verified 138 more, bringing the total number of people in Iowa whose deaths have been attributed to the respiratory disease to 3,589. Earlier this month, Iowa public health officials said they were changing the way they were confirming deaths caused by COVID-19. Starting after December 7, the state began counting according to federal cause of death coding, which is based on the death record completed by the healthcare provider and no longer reconciling a death with a previous record of a positive coronavirus test. Because of the change, COVID-19 deaths are no longer reported in real time on the state's coronavirus website at coronavirus.iowa.gov, and there can be delays. Of the newly confirmed COVID-19 deaths, 82 were of people over the age of 80, 48 were between the ages of 61 and 80, and 7 were between the ages of 41 and 60, and 1 was between the ages of 18 and 40, the state reported. Polk and Scott counties each reported 11 of the deaths, and Black Hawk reported 7. Marion and Woodbury counties each reported 6, and Clayton reported 5. Dubuque, Jackson, Mitchell, Palo Alto, and Pottawatomie counties each reported 4. Davis, Floyd, Jones, Lynn, Muscatine, Union, and Webster counties each reported 3. Dallas, Des Moines, Ida, Jefferson, Page, Plymouth, Pocahontas, Story, and Warren counties each reported 2. And 31 counties each reported 1 death. That would include Adair, Alamakee, Boone, Buchanan, Buena Vista, Butler, Cerro Gordo, Clay, Crawford, Delaware, Fayette, Greene, Hancock, Harrison, Henry, Humboldt, Keokuk, Kossuth, Lucas, Mills, Monona, Osceola, Poweshiek, Ringgold, Sac, Sioux, Washington, Wapello, Winnebago, Winneshiek, and Wright. Iowa also reported 2,440 new cases over the 24-hour period ending at 11 a.m. Sunday, for a total of 267,147 so far. The new cases were based on 8,504 new test results in the period, meaning that 6,064 tests were negative or inconclusive. Of the new cases, 136 were added in Linn County, and 73 were in Johnson County. The number of patients being treated for the disease in Iowa hospitals declined over the 24-hour period, though the share of patients seriously ill increased. Hospitalizations dropped from 679 to 639, while patients in intensive care increased from 140 to 149, and those on ventilators went up from 77 to 79, state data shows. The state reported outbreaks Sunday morning in 142 long-term care facilities, the same total as a day earlier. Here are some Eastern Iowa briefs for today from Iowa City. Burr Oak Land Trust wins a $5,000 grant. Burr Oak Land Trust is among 20 recipients of $5,000 in the Mountain Dew Outdoor Grants Program, which awarded Heartland-based outdoor organizations a total of $100,000 in grant funds. Whether through wildlife conservation, environmental preservation, or outdoor recreation, all nonprofits share a common goal of enhancing and protecting the outdoors for the continuing benefit of everyone. To receive a grant, all winning organizations either applied online or were nominated by a third party. Other winners include North Dakota Wildlife Federation, Giving Back Outdoors, Heartlands Conservancy, Kentucky Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, Sportsmen for the Boundary Waters, Fishing Has No Boundaries Incorporated, TLS Veterans Outdoors, Huntsman's Foundation, Wounded Warriors Guide Service, Ward 8 Woods Conservancy, Capable Partners Incorporated, Iowa Pioneer Pheasants Forever, Heroes Hunt for Veterans, Indifly, Hunting with Heroes Wyoming, QDMA, Frosty Tines Branch, and Charlie 22 Outdoors, Working Dogs for Conservation and Swift Outdoor Accessible Recreation. For more information on the Burr Oak Land Trust, go to burroaklandtrust.org. And from Cedar Rapids, Orchestra Iowa cancels January and February concerts. With COVID-19 continuing to evolve, Orchestra Iowa has decided to cancel all January and February performances to ensure the safety of its community, musicians, and staff. A decision on the remainder of the 2020-2021 decision will be announced on February 1st. The following performances have been canceled. Three's A Crowd, that's Musical Trios, January 8 to 10, Opus Concert Cafe in Cedar Rapids, and Coralville Center for the Performing Arts, and Cold War Meltdown, that's January 30 and 31 at the Paramount Theater in Cedar Rapids and the Coralville Center for the Performing Arts. And finally, A Night at the Oscars, February 20, the Paramount Theater in Cedar Rapids. For more information on refunding, exchanging, or donating tickets, go to artsiowa.com/orchestra. In the meantime, join music director Tim Hankowicz for his virtual happy hour with Maestro Tim at 5 p.m. Tuesdays at facebook.com/orchestraiowa. With cocktail in hand, he's been discussing his own musical journey and chatting away with guests since May. And our pet of the week is Gulliver. Gulliver is a 7-year-old neutered male who is sweet and loves to snuggle and is declawed in front. He likes helping with paperwork and lying in laps while you work. He'd be a great companion for people who are working from home now, and he can be adopted for $45 from the Cedar Valley Humane Society at 7411 Mount Vernon Road, Southeast in Cedar Rapids. The shelter is open by appointment only. Call 319-362-6288. And that does it for reading today's Cedar Rapids Gazette. That's for Monday, December the 21st. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website at iowaradioreading.org at any time. And thank you for listening.